Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today, no kidding, it's Monday, April 1st, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend a couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my relationships, of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. From that website, you can actually download the actual worksheet process itself. It's just a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials, and if you have any of those to share with us, we appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll see that that's up, turn on the microphone, and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. We always appreciate whenever anybody does that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work, whether you give us a call live or you send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. That's W-H-Y-A-G-A-I-N.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you, we'll address it on the show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. So, welcome. Thank you all for being here, and please let us know what would be of most use to you as we proceed in our study of this work and our reading of things like The Way of Mastery. And I've mentioned that I'm also going through the Anthony DeMello book again. He has several books, but one of them that I read probably once or twice a year is called Awareness. And the Awareness book is it's a real gem for me, because he's got a good sense of humor, because he's talking about the very same things that Michael Singer would talk about, even though he's a Jesuit priest. He's basically talking about the same things that yogis talk about. And his level of understanding, the depth of his understanding of the true nature of our lives, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, is on par with any I've ever encountered. So if you have any interest in that, the book is titled Awareness, and his name is Anthony DeMello. He's no longer with us. He won't be writing any other books, but what he has left us is entirely accessible through his books. And recently they put out his Audible book of the Awareness, which is basically his voice, so you get to hear his pacing and his humor. And it's basically recordings of him at different seminars that he's held, or retreats, I guess they would have called them. He's calling us to do the very same thing that Way of Master is calling us to do, which is to put aside the readings and put aside all of the belief and live in the observation and understand that unless we start observing ourselves differently, unless we start understanding ourselves differently and creating something different in our lives, it's never going to change. And we can't imitate somebody else and achieve a result. One of the lines that he has in the book is that you cannot imitate Christ or imitate what Christ did outwardly and become enlightened. He said, you know, when a monkey learns how to blow on a saxophone and make noise, it doesn't mean the monkey is a musician. If we imitate anyone, we're not living the way the great masters have lived. They lived authentically of themselves in their own way, and that's one of the powerful messages that I get through the Way of Mastery. And it says, you know, this is it's talking as though it's being written by Jesus and of Nazareth, and so Yeshua. And so it says, look, this was my cross. This was my way to demonstrate that, you know, life, that the life that really matters is not the physical life, and that, you know, the true death is the spiritual death, and you don't have to die that way. You can awake to your true nature, and you can have a resurrection each new present moment. Well, that's essentially the message that Anthony DeMello is trying to give us when he says, look, you know, you can't imitate Christ and achieve what Christ achieved, because Christ wasn't imitating anybody. He was living his own life. He was finding his own answers. He was awake to his own true nature. And, you know, the other thing about the book, the Awareness book, is that he talks over and over again about how all the great teachers, whether it's from the great ones from the West or most of those from the East, they say, look, the truth can't be talked about. You can't describe love. You can't describe enlightenment. You can talk about what love is not, what love isn't, what enlightenment isn't, but, you know, all the great teachings, whether it's from the Christian mystics or the Eastern mystics, they all say, you know, the person who says he knows doesn't know. And she who says she doesn't know, she's onto something. Because all we can do is describe the opposite of love, the opposite of enlightenment. We can describe what it's like when we're stuck, when we're torturing ourselves needlessly over mental, emotional issues. We can't describe God. We can't describe love. We can't describe enlightenment. But we can describe the pain and the suffering that we have. And we can learn to observe what it is that we're doing with our thought that's creating all that pain and suffering that we say we don't want. And, you know, I'm just hoping that you hear the same thing there as you hear when we are reading The Way of Mastery, and it says, you know, here's an exercise to help you understand how you don't truly know what anything is or is for. You don't know what any of the people that you interact with, who they are, when they were created, what they need. You don't know when you were created. At one point in The Way of Mastery, it invites us into this awareness of our divine ignorance. Going to situation after situation, understanding that my thoughts about the thing are not the thing. My thoughts about the people I'm interacting with are not the same as who that person is. You're not your thoughts about yourself. You are far more than any kind of a snapshot that your thoughts or conclusions could give. And you don't truly know where you came from or where you're going. And if you want to pretend that you do, you will end up slumbering in your suffering. And that's not necessary. You can do that if you want, but it's not necessary. So what's the difference? What are my options? Well, awaking is an option. Coming wide awake, learning to live from direct observation, learning to be willing to use your mind energy differently every day, moment to moment, prior to every breath, paying attention to what it is that you're creating as your experience of life by what you're focusing on, paying attention to what you're communicating to yourself and the world around you that you truly value by how you're spending your time, how you're spending your mind energy and your thoughts and your words. That's the invitation with this work. And it's the invitation with the Reality Management Worksheet. Dismantle everything that's less than love, and you will have a direct experience of your true nature as love. As Way of Mastery says, and Course in Miracles says, you don't need to create love. You don't need to work hard to get somewhere. You just need to look for and find and then dismantle everything that's within your system that blocks you from having a direct experience of yourself as the mystery of creation expressing in form, or the energy of love expressing in form, or as Michael Rice talks about it in his most recent seven-step reality management worksheet. Everything that is in your system that blocks you from being aware of your essential nature, your human life, your very being, is capital L love. And the wake-up sheet itself is a tool to empower you to remove any form of fear and or hostility that might block you from that awareness of your true nature. And that's all you do. You just remove the blockages to the awareness of your true nature, and then the next thing you know, you're in this awareness of your true nature 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. There's nothing to do once you've removed the false, or once you've awakened from the dream of separation. There's just life to be experienced. There's just joy and bliss to be lived in. So again, we have the same message coming at us over and over again from a lot of different teachers. In the worksheet process itself, in Guy Finley's work, in the Way of Mastery, in the Course in Miracles, in Anthony DeMello's work, how are you doing accepting the invitation? What is it that you're doing that's allowing you this direct access? 610, Susan?
Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome.
You said a couple things. First of all, you just had a clause in there that sort of delineated what my son appears to be going through. You know, terrible self-talk, negative. He's now taken an official leave of absence from his medical practice, and he thought he would feel better. And when we went up and got a dog that they had sent up from Aruba, we were excited and went to the airport to get it, and he seemed somewhat better because he had a project. But as soon as he's back with his own thoughts, he's beating himself up. And one of the sentences you said, can't remember, and you probably can't either, just that these tools help find a way out of this kind of negative thinking. And one way I've been watching Tim Bingham doing his Annie Hopper work with neuroplasticity, and I got the book you had mentioned by Norman Doidge. And I wanted to ask you about a paragraph. I'm not very far in, but there's a paragraph here that I would love to have you talk about. But before I get there, I just want to say, once again, I suggested to my son that he give you a call and set up a session with you if you had time. And he said he's getting to the point where he'd be willing to do that. But then he said, do I have to do wake-up sheets? I thought, Tim Hayes has a ton of approaches, and he won't insist on any. He understands that some tools just aren't right for some people, and some are, and, you know, he will work with you what you can do, and he's very eclectic, which is very exciting. And he said, well, I'm at the point where I don't even have the energy to make a call to somebody I don't know, but I might get there. So that's just an alert that might happen. And then I wanted to ask you about this paragraph from Norman Doidge, which isn't directly about my son at all. So is it okay if I do that, or did you want to say something?
No, go right ahead.
Is this from the
book The Brain that Changes Itself?
Yes, and this is from the preface. He says, while the human brain has apparently underestimated itself, neuroplasticity isn't all good news. It renders our brains not only more resourceful, but also more vulnerable to outside influences. And then I could go on, but that blew my mind, that it's evidently we become aware of a kind of openness maybe to the workings of the world and perhaps our vulnerability to them. I will keep going. He says, neuroplasticity has the power to produce more flexible but also more rigid behaviors, a phenomenon I call the plastic paradox. Ironically, some of our most stubborn habits and disorders are products of our plasticity. Once a particular plastic change occurs in the brain and becomes well established, it can prevent other changes from occurring. It is by understanding both the positive and negative effects of plasticity that we can truly understand the extent of human possibilities. That's the paragraph. I don't exactly have a question. It's just, it made the whole field broader to me than I
expected. Well, and it should, you know, if you let it, it should help you generate optimism, because what you're dealing with here is a true scientist who's not just saying, hey, yippee, the brain's plastic. Isn't this great news? Everything is... There are issues both ways, and this is going to be somebody who's going to look at it from, you know, the old adage that, you know, everything in life is trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
There are some trade-offs here, and if you can become aware of the ways in which that neuroplasticity works for us and at times against us, then you can find workarounds. But if you're not
mm-hmm.
even aware of it, then you can't work with it.
I used to have it was an uncle of Tim Bingham's who was a medical renegade. He wasn't a renegade. He was actually way ahead of his time, like the way John Sarno is and like the way this Paul Bachirita is, who made all these amazing mechanical / electrical gizmos to hitch, as I understand it, hitch parts of the brain up to other parts that didn't appear to have anything to do with what they were concerned about, like this woman who kept falling. He built her a helmet and hitched her tongue to something that had certain capacity to communicate with a part of the brain, and she began to be able to stand upright and not fall down. And after she used the gizmos for periods of time, she became well and no longer had that problem. And I guess I'm just reporting about how amazing the human brain is and how it isn't compartmentalized at all. Everything can feed something else. If something is hurt, something else can take over. Anyway, I'm just reporting on having my mind blown over and over again by reading this book, and I'm not very far in at all, and I certainly don't understand it. So that's, I don't know what that is. It's not a question exactly.
Well, and as I was just saying, if you let it, it can, even if it sounds negative at some level, you can let it be the seed you use to generate some hope.
Mm.
Because what you're looking at here in reading this book is somebody who's just going to keep asking the difficult questions and find a way to use scientific method to test them out and not be told by someone just because it's the prevailing wisdom, quote, wisdom, close quote, in the field, not be told by somebody you can't do this or that.
Yeah. He's definitely proving that. But you said something at the end of your spiel just now about how if you do this, you'll get to the point where you can be 24/7 in a state of bliss. And I'm thinking, whoa, that doesn't sound like you. Usually you say the work never stops and we have glimmers and we have periods of time, but we have challenges that may not end until we drop the body. So what are you doing there, Dr. Tim?
So somehow or another, you got very quiet. Did you shift your phone?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you got very quiet.
Oh, I didn't shift my phone. I don't know what happened. Sorry.
So I'm just turning my volume up to max. So you think you heard me say something that's very different than what I've said in the past? And
you said
I think
if you
all
do
you're
this-
hearing is... I think all you're hearing is that I'm reporting what the great teachers say. I'm not saying I've gotten there or that I know this to be true.
Okay.
But and here's another level of this, that it's the kind of thing that Guy Finley would say when he talks about the fearless life, and he says, you know, please don't misunderstand. It's not like the fearless life has no fear in it. It's kind of like the way of mastery in lesson 3 where it says, it doesn't mean you won't have anger. Of course you'll have anger. Just quit rationalizing it. Quit trying to justify it. You're going to have these energies move through the field of your mind because your mind is what has been conditioned into it. It's just that if you understand it and you understand you are not your mind, then you, the awareness, the soul, the spirit, the whatever, can step back and look and see that stuff happening and not be disturbed by it. Your peace will remain intact. Even if...
No, Dr. Tim...
Angry thoughts and depressed thoughts are moving through you. Go ahead.
Whoa. Well, I was just going to say, here's my son who is really, really, really having a hard time. And it isn't, I feel as if I'm doing what you just said. I feel as if I am okay. But I don't not feel pain. I really mind terribly that he's having to go through this. But I'm pretty clear that it isn't something I can do much about except remain very present and not try to offer him premature enlightened solutions. And the tools have helped me that way incredibly. I'm not in the same tailspin that I might have been 5 or 10 years ago. But it isn't as if it isn't painful. And I don't think that pain is bad. I think that's just what's going to happen when we're connected to other people that we care a lot about.
There you go. I think that's closer to what these great teachings are pointing us towards. They're helping us have access to a different way to understand and deal with these energies in our lives rather than what we've been conditioned to believe, that we should always be happy and bouncing around joyful or whatever, that we can be okay even if there's discomfort, even if there's conflict seeming.
Right.
And that, you know, as Way of Mastery would say, we're creating our experience of it, whatever it is, moment to moment.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe there's still work to be done there. But
yeah, it is not that, you know, you just, you are always skipping down the street. That you just have an awareness that is very different. And like I just finished saying in the intro today, we can't describe it with our words. Right? Just like you can't describe God with words or love with words. What you can do is talk about what it isn't.
Yeah.
Right? You can say that love doesn't reject anything. Love allows all things, accept all. But you're not talking about love itself. You're just saying what it doesn't do. It doesn't reject. It doesn't get tight or tense. It doesn't feed into the dream of separation. You know, this level of awareness that, you know, we would call God or light or love doesn't argue against things. It just allows. It just has a whole different way of being in the world that, according to what, you know, one way of saying it, that is not here, that isn't conditioned by our thought and our culture. So I didn't say much about what it is, but I said a few things it isn't.
Yeah.
It isn't what our culture teaches.
When we talk about two-way prayer, and then anybody who's practicing that will probably come up against the question of, hey, whose voice am I hearing here? These are things I do want to hear, but am I just talking to myself? And that's true. What's also...
Keep going.
The thing is, how else would God get in touch with us except through our...
Exactly.
What are you giggling about?
Because you're right on it. I mean, why are we trying to make it less just because it's me seeming to think or talk in my own voice? Where do we think I came from? Right?
I know,
right?
But
like, you think I came from something other than God, other than all that is?
Well, you jumped a whole bunch of hurdles, but yes, I agree. But I think in the interim, when we're not ready to accept our own voice, if it's loving, it's got to be both our voice and God's voice, at least.
But listen, if it's loving, it's got to be both. Mm-hmm. If it's loving, there is no both.
Oh, boy, that's good.
The point is that love allows all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, and thereby transcends all things. So love understands there's no separation.
Well, you know what? I've never
it's
liked
the non-loving, it. It's a non-loving thing that dreams of separation. You've never liked it what?
When somebody says, after all, we're all one, but you just got me there. You just did it with what you just said. I got that. I got the connection and the seamlessness of the whole thing. I am a person who always wanted God to speak to me in a slightly exotic foreign accent. I have a deep...
And then
you know?
I'm sure she will eventually.
I don't know. I don't think we need that anymore. Anyway, but I like that you said she, because the one experience I did have was a woman singing to me in my, whatever it was, where I felt that it was the voice of God and it was a woman's voice, but I still expect a man in a deep voice to be talking to me with a foreign accent in my own language so I get the words. I'm just doing away with my own myths, but it's wonderful to have you sort of walk us right to the wall there.
Well, that would be the point, is that when it's the truth, there is no separation, and so it's not that you're being talked to from God's voice as different than your voice, because, and the other thing is that what's going to happen when this communication takes place is not going to be through words. Because words are so inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, describe to me the best, you know, deep chocolate dessert you've ever had. It doesn't matter how many words you use for that. It's not going to even come close to the experience of the dessert.
True.
Well, imagine how much more that's the case for love itself, or enlightenment, or God.
Mm.
So, you know, when the communication happens, it's not going to be through a voice. It's not going to have words attached. I hope that's not too big a disappointment.
No, not at all. That's fine with me. I think I'll know it when it happens, if it happens. It doesn't matter how it happens. You'll just recognize it.
Yeah.
It's funny. Helen, some videos have shown up on my feed. Old talks, audio discussions with Helen Schuckman, who's for those on the radio show, she's the one that channeled the Course in Miracles.
And who actually came to one of your Course in Miracles groups.
Yes, she did. But she always is saying, it wasn't my voice, and it wasn't even a voice, and it wasn't even talking. But I couldn't write fast enough. She was a stenographer and wrote in shorthand, and that's the only way she could take everything down, because it was coming through so fast. And then she would say, stop, I've got to go hang up the laundry. She had no reverence in the way we think we ought to, you know, bowing before the cross at the altar and so forth. She'd just say, basically, shut up for a while, I've got other things to do, knowing that she would settle in and the voice would, or the messages would come right back where they were before. I don't know why I'm telling you this, because it's very different from, she didn't say it wasn't words, but it wasn't her voice. And I should listen more. I thought I knew these things, having talked to her. She kept saying, I don't know how I'm getting them. I don't even like them. I don't understand what they're talking about. This isn't my tradition. This is an amazing example of an unwilling almost channel who somehow got bombarded and started taking things down. She was willing to do that. I'm going on a tangent, Dr. Tim. You may have plans for this radio show. So I don't have to talk anymore. It's just that things get going.
But that's the thing, is that when it starts coming through, it's not going to be so much in talk. It's certainly not going to be anything that we have comfort or familiarity with. So, by the way, if in the near future this deep voice with this exotic accent you're talking about starts talking to you, be skeptical, because it probably means it's your mind. It's your ego. I'm not saying ignore it altogether, but at least be skeptical, because there's a good chance it's going to be your ego having created this.
Mm-hmm.
Because well, the essence of our talk here is that it's not about words. It's not about language that we've heard before in a slightly different way. It's going to be completely incomprehensible in terms of words and language. It has
and
to be
totally,
brand new.
But totally familiar.
It's going to be, as these great teachings tell us, like waking up, like remembering.
Mm.
So there's that, you know, what we would call a paradox, because we can't conceive of something that seems completely new and I'm just remembering it because it's completely familiar. But again, some of the great teachings, like I think it was in the Christian Sundberg's book.
A Walk in the
Physical. A Walk in the Physical. I think they talk about how there is no such thing as a paradox when you see the whole truth. Everything makes sense. And so when we are imagining that we're looking at something that is a paradox, what we have is evidence in that moment that we're only seeing a small part of what's going on.
Oh. Nice.
So, you know, it might seem absolutely bizarre to say it's going to be unlike anything we've ever heard or seen or experienced before, and yet it will feel familiar.
Yep.
And yet, if you have this awareness that if it feels like a paradox, all that means is I don't see the whole picture yet. I'm only seeing a tiny fraction.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Our rector at our church gave a fantastic Easter sermon yesterday, and it involved inviting little kids up to the altar steps, the steps in front of the chancel, to hear the first part of it. And what he did was pull out a tiny little plastic statue of Jesus. And we've been finding these little statues all over the church. They show up in the pulpit or in a flower pot or at the ambo or on the altar, and nobody knows who is putting them there and who is moving them around. And it's been totally magical to have this mystery going on. So he pulled out one of these little statues and he showed it to the kids. And he said, this is what you have to do. This looks very small, but you have to be on the lookout everywhere, all the time, for when Jesus is going to show up. He might be in the broom closet or in the subway. And what it is that people who are representing, who are Christ-like, who are love incarnate right on the earth, and they might not look the part, give up all your ideas, which is sort of what you're saying. Don't expect it to sound like a low voice with a foreign accent. But I think these kids really got that they'll be looking for the translation of that little Christ figure in everybody all the time. I hope that's what he meant. Anyway, I just wanted to tell you about that because I was so taken with it, and I've also done a sneaky thing. Walmart sells these little statues. I ordered 24 of them, and I'm going to mark the bottoms of them with a dot. And I'm going to start putting them around the church, too, and nobody's going to know who's doing it, including the person who's already putting them around. Just a little fun there.
Well, as soon as you told that, it reminded me of the time I've told this story before, but I had about a 16 going on 17-year-old in my office, and he'd had some rough times, but he had turned it around and gotten involved with a church group And one of his coaches, ministers, whatever, had told him how to pray to God to send him a sign that God was working in his life. And this was, you know, prompted, this story was prompted back into my awareness by your talking about your person telling these kids they've got to be on the lookout for, you know, Jesus in their life. So it was the only time I can remember that I gave any advice as a psychologist that would tweak or perhaps even go against what any minister or priest had told somebody. And so I just came to me very strongly, just go ahead and go for it, even though it violates, you know, my basic premise of keep separation of church and therapy,
state.
Right?
Right.
And I said, well, I'm going to suggest that you take a look at a different prayer. And why don't you pray to be able to see all the ways God is already in your life every day.
Fantastic, Dr. Tim. That's great. That's great.
Since the teaching is God is always and everywhere and God is love and et cetera. So I said, I just, you know, if you're in a space where you just don't think you can see God because this or that is going on that you don't like, instead of praying for God to show you a sign, just pray to be able to see all the ways God is already there.
Yeah, because we're all waiting for a low voice with a foreign accent, and you can miss a heck of a lot if that's what you're listening for.
Yes, yes. Whether we know it or not, we're all looking for a low voice with a heavy accent.
Right, or the equivalent. Well, you know, this brings me to a thought about something that happened with my son, which to me seems like a total miracle. Here's my son just barely functioning, making himself do whatever he needs to do to get through a day. And he's working on a boat that he bought. It's 2.5 hours away in a marina, Arbor de Grace. And it's up on its blocks. It's not in the water, but there's a lot wrong with the boat. He got it in need of many repairs, and he's a very good handyman. So he's been going to the boat. He got to the point where he couldn't do certain things. He needed an electrician, and he needed a strong helper. And he called a friend, and the friend said, gosh, I can't do that, but you ought to call this guy named Andy. Well, Jonathan calls Andy. And it turns out that Andy not only is an electrician, lives near the marina, was in the military for a gazillion years, and is a sailor, captain of boats. He's sailed a lot. But he is in a position right now to need work because he has just come through a terrible personal life crisis, including nearly dying from liver failure because of alcoholism. And he was in the hospital, and his doctor's name was Angel. Aniel, I guess. And he took that as a sign that he's got to turn things around. And he did. And he has been sober for how many years now? But he's familiar with tremendous disappointment and depression. And Jonathan, being a doctor in the hospital situation, you don't go around talking about being depressed and anxious. They all act as if they're fine because they're taking care of other people. But Jonathan began to talk to him, and he said, oh, my God, I know just what you feel like. And maybe they're becoming friends, and this guy is available to help him on the boat practically whenever Jonathan needs it. And he's an electrician, so he's I mean, Dr. Kim, what's the likelihood of something like that happening? And that my son sees, and he even said, the guy said, when I finally started getting my life together, I realized this was a new life I had. I was headed for dying, and I was going to do that. But Dr. Angel turned me around, and I decided I would look upon each day as a tremendous gift and opportunity. And he said, now it's your turn to do that too. And Jonathan agrees with him. He's just not feeling as if he can do that right now. But he knows that's the way to go. But talk about God showing up in your life. It just seems miraculous to me that one phone call led to finding a person who fit that description so closely.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And as Jung would, you know, C.G. Jung, the great psychiatrist of contemporary of Freud, et cetera, as he would point out, this is what he would call synchronicity, and these synchronicities are there all over the place.
Yeah.
We are not trained to see them. We don't look for them, but it doesn't mean they're not there. It's kind of what, you know, these great teachings are telling us we're going to see more and more of as we do the work of dismantling the upsets. That, you know, any tension, any bitterness, any fear, any of the stepchildren of fear, which is, you know, the offspring of the dream of separation, the more we dismantle that, it's like the Way of Mastery in Lesson 3 says, this is, you do this process of forgiveness. You get rid of what is not real. You move it out of your system, and it takes you deeper and deeper. Every time you do it, it takes you deeper and deeper into the purity of your own consciousness. In other words, into the truth of life itself.
And when you're there, like things that are similar will show up because it's all one big soup.
And the other part of it is they're there all the time and we don't see them and or take advantage of them. And as you start to remove all of that stuff that's less than love and gratitude and appreciation, depending upon which word you want to give better definition to, appreciation or gratitude, as you remove the stuff that's not wide open and crystal clear vision, then you start to see this stuff everywhere you turn. Makes sense. Area code 541, who's just put up a hand. You're in the air.
Hello, Susan and Dr. Tim.
Hello.
This is Celinda, and I'm thoroughly absorbed with your conversation. Thank you very much, both of you. I remember what Carolyn Mace said when I would be reading her books, and she would, or listening to her cassette tapes, that she would say very often, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. And that has really been helpful for me. I'm beginning to understand it a little bit now. Everything seems to be having to come down from between my ears into the understanding part of myself and my heart before I can begin to act upon them with my physiology. I like what you were talking today about the neuroplasticity, and can you remind me of the author and the title of that book? I'll write it down right now, that Susan was talking about. You, Susan.
You got it right there, Dr. Tim?
Yeah, the title of the book is The Brain That Changes Itself.
Oh, good. I couldn't remember which one it was. And the gentleman's name?
Norman, and the last name is Deutsch, D-O-I-D as in dog, G-E. D as in dog, O-I, D as in dog, G as in great, E. Norman Deutsch, M.D.
Okay. I appreciate that. Yeah. One of the things, I also love what you mentioned about living in the paradox. It's like I may not understand totally, in fact, I do not understand totally what it means to live in the paradox, but I've settled more and more, I'm settling more and more into just being in the paradox and not worrying about it and understanding that I don't understand and it's okay. And it certainly is helping me relax a great deal more. And I think it's part of my beginning to act from this and that rather than either or. And I just wanted to share that because this is very helpful for me. I had an experience recently about a person that I was speaking with, and the pain that was coming out with this person, and I found myself mirroring that, the tears that were trying to form myself. And there was just a sense for me, I don't even know where it came from, of this is okay. One, it means that you have more to release of your own pain from the past, and two, that it's okay because we're right on schedule, and it's a good feeling for me to empathize, and if tears happen to come up because I'm empathizing, I know that they're my tears. They belong to me, and they are more releasing of the pain. And I can go do a forgiveness sheet. I can do a letting go. I can do whatever process I need to do to let that be and just watch it dissolve in the joy of the connection between me and the other person. Underneath that pain is joy. That's what I'm beginning to experience. And as I let it go, more joy bubbles up. I just wanted to share that with you because it is helpful to me and it's very soothing to me, and I thought I would just share that.
Well, I'm glad you're getting there. That's what the teachings tell us, the deep teachings say. When you get enough of the garbage out of the way, that's what you're left with. So thank you both for the comments and questions today. I'll mute you so you can listen to the second hour. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate it. Welcome to April.
Welcome to April. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Monday, April the 1st, 2024. And that's no joke. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in, and I'll just say we've had a couple of volunteers to take some of the archive shows, starting with the older ones, and adding information that, you know, I didn't take notes in the beginning. And so they were going to do summaries of what's on that particular show, and they're going to convert them into MP4s so that we can upload them to our YouTube channel. So we appreciate people volunteering to take on tasks like that. You know, they're not hard, but it is definitely time-consuming, and we appreciate the offer to take care of that. So Michael has joined us, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. And did you announce the two different projects we could really use some help with, sweetie?
I just announced that we had had a couple of people that were going to work on converting the archived radio shows into MP4s, but I didn't mention the other one yet. That one.
Well, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, well, we had talked about there's one of the things that has to be done to turn an MP3 into an MP4 is it has to have a picture. And so we created, it's actually a picture that's on our website of the microphone that says archives. And it requires that you open the JPEG and then across the middle, lower middle part of the picture, you add text that says, like, for instance, January 2021, Mindshifters Radio, or February 2021, Mindshifters Radio. And that will be the picture for all of the shows for that month and that year. And so that's just an extra step that needs to be done. I'm not sure if the people that have volunteered to do the conversions can do that too. The only thing is having a third person do that, they're going to have to stay ahead of the guys that are converting because they have to have the picture to actually convert the MP3 to an MP4, so they'd have to, whoever did just the pictures would have to stay ahead of them. So I'm not sure, haven't heard back yet whether the people that are going to do the conversions can do that as well. And if you're familiar with how to do any of that, converting from MP3s to MP4s, we're going to actually give each person a section. You know, you do from this month to this month, or you do whatever, and that way they're not each converting the same ones and listening to the shows as they're converting, and so therefore they can give us a summary, because when I upload them to YouTube, I also need a description that's going to be searchable. And it doesn't have to be a big, long summary. It could be, you know, Dr. Michael Rice explains codependency, you know, or the discussion is about breathing, or the discussion is, you know, or whatever. Just, you know, even a short...
Or it could be more detailed.
Right, but... You know,
it'd be nice
that
if it were detailed.
Something that
and it becomes
would
a searchable,
searchable
database. Yeah.
Right, but I don't want a 3-page synopsis
right.
of a 1-hour
yeah.
show.
Right, of course.
So
yeah.
Anyway, that's what's going on this end.
So the project of editing the pictures would mean 160 or 170 times taking a picture and creating a text box lay over top of the previous picture with January 2012, February 2012, March 2012, December 2012, then January 2013. So from our first show, so 14 years times 12. If anybody's got that skill and doesn't mind doing something that's a little bit rote, it'd be nice to have that done. So I don't know. We haven't heard back from the folks that have volunteered to do some of the conversion. And if you're into where you want to learn about converting what they call an MP3, an audio file, which is what we end up with out of this show, into an MP4, which can also be an audio file but is designed to be video. That's why we need a picture attached. We would love your support and assistance. We're trying to build our YouTube listenership. And instead of 200 videos or 200 or so videos on there, with this, we'll end up with about 5,200. So, and we'll be shifting over so that all the links to those will be in our website in wygen.org, so that anytime anybody wants to listen, they can just go directly from our website to YouTube. So anyway, just one of the things we're doing we're working to, you know, the ultimate commitment is to make this available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, and that appears to be the next project in order to make that an actuality, in order to bring it into the world. So if you're out there and you'd like to support us, that would be awesome. Beyond that, if you're a millionaire and you'd like to support us, that would be helpful too. We'd hire somebody to do those projects. But anyway, however it all fits together, the main thing is that we put it in people's hands. And, you know, just a reminder to everybody that once the show is over, and I'm not even sure exactly how long it takes them, but within minutes, there's an MP3 available. So once we finish a show, if it was one, you know, what Dr. Tim had to say was really hit you, you know, really meant something to you, or what comes up in this section of the show, then you can go to our website, whyagain.org. In the middle of the page, there's a microphone. Click the microphone, just drill down to this date, today's date, and you can download the MP3 or make a copy of it so that you can send it to somebody. Share the show, put the information out there, and rock and roll. You might look, several people I sent a text to last night. I started to do an Easter greeting that ended up becoming the Aramaic story of Easter. And last night I completed, it was actually getting a little late, but I went ahead and sent links out. I posted it on Facebook. And then if you've gone through it, I'll invite you to go through it again. I just posted about half an hour or so before the show a new update. Been about 5 updates this morning. I'm going through and re-editing it and making some significant changes, expanding it considerably. I actually was saying to Jeannie that back several years ago I had considered writing a book entitled Would the Real Aramaic Yeshua Please Stand Up? And this may end up being that book, as I'm going through step by step with what's the actuality of his teaching, and then a scriptural quote that verifies, you know, this is it. This isn't about theology. It's not about religion. It's about really, truly stepping up to doing your work. And man made it into religion. We're looking to take it out of that realm. Everybody can do the religious practice that they choose to do. And first century Aramaic forgiveness, Ali Yeshua, applies to Muslims. It applies to Jews. It applies to Sikhs. It applies to Buddhists. I don't care who it is. Actually, several years ago, we were traveling up the West Coast Highway up through California, and we happened to, and it's kind of rare, but we had a 3-day hold in our schedule, and we got an email from a student who was at a retreat center a Buddhist, I'm not sure even what they call it, but anyway, a study center. And the teacher there, who's, they call him Kempo, which I understand means teacher, who is, he's considered to be the verified Buddha of wisdom in the Buddhist tradition, i.e., you know, they have a panel that goes back and checks out the lineage and all, you know, all the stuff that goes to say, yeah, this is the guy. Anyway, he had escaped when all the stuff was going on in Tibet to America and set up a center. And we got an email from someone, a student of ours who was at his center, that said our teacher was ill and he went for treatment to a medical facility, and the medical facility had our DVDs. And he said he wouldn't leave until he listened to all of your DVDs, and he would like to meet you. We just happened to be, I don't remember exactly, Jeannie was driving, I think, we were in the motorhome, and we were about 4 or 5 hours from his center with a 3-day hold on our schedule. So he said, oh, well, we'll veer off the road. And we went and visited, and I taught him the Aramaic forgiveness process. I actually ended up doing the whole Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop for him personally and his assistant. When we finished that, And he's just the sweetest little guy. He's probably about 5'3", but just an amazing, sweet presence of love. He said, would you teach this to my students? And he had students from all over the world there. So we did a Wise is Happening to Begin workshop. So we were there for the 3 days and then heading, I guess we were there for 2 days because we were heading on up to Seattle where we were speaking. And he had a study group in Portland, Oregon. And yes, so we hadn't gone so far as California. This was still in Oregon. Portland, Oregon, and I forget what other town. There was another town. So on our way, he said, would you stop at my centers and teach this workshop? So we went to the first center. Again, I'm not remembering what town it was. Do you remember what town it was, Jeannie?
Was it Eugene?
I believe it was Eugene, yes. Yeah. So we taught it in Eugene, Oregon, to his, and they were mostly English-speaking students, but in Portland, they were mostly Tibetan-speaking. It was really pretty cool. I wish I had a video of that workshop because I taught the workshop in English, and he taught the workshop. He followed up and taught the workshop in Tibetan. It was pretty awesome. But he said to me, he said, when we were in Tibet, we did not have anything like this. We had no knowledge of forgiveness, and we didn't need it. The way our culture worked, the Buddhist culture worked, we didn't need it. But now that we're in America, we really need this. We've been back there 2 or 3 times since, and we've always had an open invitation to go and teach there whenever we're out in that direction. So the forgiveness process, I don't care what somebody's religious background is. It's not a religious process. Forgiveness has nothing to do with religion, though religions use it. If medical people are smart, if chiropractors, if medical doctors, if psychologists, if psychiatrists are smart, forgiveness is part of their work. It's part of their teaching. And so it's applicable in any philosophical system, any religious system. It's just a tool. You know, it's like saying, oh, we have Catholic cars. You can't have Protestants. You can't have Jews. You can't have Muslims driving Catholic cars. They're only, I mean, it's just silly. Forgiveness is just a tool, and it's applicable. My offering is the reason why our culture is in the trauma it's in. And I'm talking about our global culture, not just our local culture here, which has got some really deep insanity going on. Starving in third world countries or people starving in America. By the way, there are some states, sadly in particular, 14 of the 15 states that have the most starving children are what we call red states. If you want to look up the statistics, that's the way it is. Policies that produce starvation in children. It's interesting that, you know, the president, when he came into office, set up a system for helping to feed those children, pulled, I don't even remember now, several million children out of poverty. And it was a child tax credit expired, sadly, and the red state representatives blocked renewing it. So their children went back to starvation. I mean, it's just crazy. But why is that happening? Because people don't have forgiveness. They don't know that they're dealing with projections of their own minds when they look at the pictures on the inside of their eyeballs. They think they're actually looking out in the world. And they see a world filled with terror and trauma because their own minds are filled with unresolved terror and trauma, generational cultural patterns, family patterns of terror and trauma. And without forgiveness, without the ability to remove that, then those are the things that drive people's minds, that drive people's behaviors. So what we're looking to do is to make this simple, step-by-step technology available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. If you got my text last night on the Aramaic Easter story, you went through it last night, I'd invite you to go back. It's significantly upgraded since last night. And I'm not finished with it. It'll be significantly upgraded probably 2 or 3 more times over the next few days until it's complete. So hope you enjoy that.
And when it's complete, we'll put it in a newsletter along with the announcement.
Yeah, we'll be sending a newsletter out. Good thought, sweetie. I didn't think to announce that, but yes. So if you're not on our newsletter list and you want a copy of that, if you go to our website, whyagain.org, go down to the bottom, And there is a link to our newsletter. So you just put it in and give us permission, and that way we'll send it to you. And or if you have the app where you can download our app, the World's Only Forgiveness app, go to your app store, type in Heartland, H-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, Forgiveness. You'll see a glowing red heart. That's our app. Download it. And when you go to use one of the worksheets, it requires you to identify yourself. And there's a checkbox there. We don't keep your information once you've identified yourself. It's not passed on to anybody. It's the app has been made specifically to be as private as an app can possibly be. But once you identify yourself, there is a checkbox where you can check it, and we'll put you on the mailing list. Otherwise, we don't keep that information. So you can download the app and sign up for the mailing list that way. Or you can send Jeannie an email, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and ask to be added, and she'll add you. So there are some of the fun things that are going on in Why Is This Happening to Me Again world. Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
I've got a call. No questions in the chat room and no hands up right now. And if you had your hand up for Dr. Tim, if you press one, it'll put your hand down, and then you press one again and it'll go back up, and we know you want to talk to Michael.
Okay. I had a gentleman that said he was going to call in with some thoughts and questions today. I just sent him a text asking him if he's going to come and play. Other than that, what is forgiveness? I think with our culture being brainwashed into the idea that forgiveness is something about me letting you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. I mean, I watch people, I listen to people who've been doing this work 10, 15, 20 years, and they still say, but I forgave them. Please, never forgive anybody for anything. Pardon them if you will. Let them off the hook. That's a wonderful thing to do. That's a Greek idea. It was interesting in the Spanish language, the word forgive is pardon. Let them off the hook. But that's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is the act of going inside yourself, cleaning up your own mind, freeing yourself from every scintilla of fear, of anger, of sadness, of grief, of rage, of pain, of drama and trauma of any sort. Literally cleaning up your energy field so that it becomes a fit vehicle for its design. And its design, I would offer, is to carry around a being called love. If you hold a newborn child and you tap into the essence of that newborn, you'll notice that the essence of the newborn is love, period. It's what we are. If our body-mind unit, you'll look in the scriptures and you'll see it talks about what was called the mind of man, man being the red clay, Adamos, the mind of Adam. Adam is a carbon-based memory. And everything that comes out of carbon-based memory, by definition, if it came out of it, it had to be there in the first place, so it's from the past. And if we rely on carbon-based memory to formulate the images in our brain that make us think we're looking at something outside of us, then what we're looking at is our past massaged into a picture that kind of matches what's going on in the world, and we think it's actually what's going on in the world. But it's not. It's what's going on in us. Why would you forgive somebody else for what's going on in you? Well, they did it to me. Well, actually, that's one of the biggest lies the mind could tell. Nobody can do to you what you haven't already done to yourself. I love that. What was the title of the song? The Eagles, She Can't Take You Anywhere That You Don't Already Know How to Go. Nobody can do to you what you haven't already done to yourself. And if you choose to grow up and come out of childhood, quit being a member of the one world universal religion of blame and function as a true human being, which is love, You apply forgiveness to the content of your carbon-based memory, generational patterns, which, you know, always do is look at the last couple hundred years on Earth, let alone the last couple of thousand years, to look at the insanity humans have been doing to each other. Look at the insanity that's going on today. Look at the threats, the violence, the just crazy town. Children in the wealthiest country the world has ever seen, where people have trillions and trillions of dollars. Children are starving in America. Like, we're something like number 36 or 46 in the world. Countries that we would consider, if we heard them, third world countries, their children are better off than children are here in America. How is that possible? Because poverty of mind, violence of mind, remains unforgiven in this culture. So forgiveness is a tool with which we go inside of ourselves and remove what never belonged. And what we're looking to do as we move forward in the study of the Enlightenment book is to develop a mindset that allows us to experience the world and the teachings, in particular this man named Yeshua, as he experienced it and as he taught it. So it's not about standing back and clapping your hands and say hooray for what you did. It's about recognizing that's a model, and the man said, the things I do, you too can do in greater. And this man was a physicist and a physiologist and a psychologist and a geneticist. He was not a theologian. But the ultimate result is, if you do what needs to be done in physics and physiology and psychology and genetics, you end up with a device that is the perfect housing for the active presence of love, which, by another name, as the scriptures refer to it, is called God. Not about religion. It's about living as human beings and having a fit vehicle for the expression of love on the earth. And what we're working to do is to bring forward the tools that people can uncover in themselves the empowerment and the capacity to function as that presence of love. So we've been looking at the dictionary, and I think we're on page 88. And we've talked about the word nafsha. We read the whole section on nafsha, which is the word that has been translated as soul. And if you're down toward the lower half of page 88, you'll see the word nartun as a verb. And that's the word that's used in the Beatitudes, where the historic interpretation by the Greeks of that beatitude shall inherit the earth. It's kind of like a passive, you know, you would do this and you know, somebody sort of gives it to you. But actually, the word that was used in that particular beatitude is nartun, which means we'll earn or gain. It's an active process, something you engage in. And so it speaks about those who will regain the earth or gain the control of their own physiology. And who moved over to page 88, and we see that everything that's preceded by the prefix NI or NIT means that it's something that's going to happen in the future. And so there are a number of passages that are quoted, John 3:31, Matthew 5:4, 5:8, 5:21. Each of these is talking about future, something that's going to come. And then Nitchazun, if we look at that word, the N-I is the prefix, future tense, and then the K-H-A-Z. So let's flip back to that in the dictionary. K-H-A-Z. So we'll see, we'll notice, understand, comprehend, learn, and accept. So this is the word that's used in the Beatitude, that if you, through service, work effectively to produce the peace and understanding under an accord with God's will, this is what will happen in your relationship with the Creator. And it speaks of in Aramaic as the Creator as Allah, the invisible source of creation. So the commitment is, if you activate this, and you go back to the Beatitude, you activate this neural structure that's being spoken of. The opening of each of the Aramaic Beatitudes does not say in the beginning, or pardon me, does not say, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they. What it says is, a latent neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession, you who. And then it gives a set of instructions for how to activate that. And so here we're speaking about this state of earning and moving into a space where we comprehend the Creator. And the word near, N-I-R-E, yoke, tie, service. So we're going to activate, we're going to move into taking on this work. Those who, through service, to this particular beatitude, is latent neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being, becomes your conscious possession. You who, through service, work effectively to produce the peace and understanding under and accord with the Creator's will, you will comprehend the Creator. Will develop an ability to be in such resonance with that active presence of love that's so far beyond the capacity of our minds to even start to put into words. But what will happen is comprehension will come. A promise is there that if you get this state of mind settled, then you will reach a place where you are in deeper relationship with the Creator. And then the next key word here, nitbeyun. So the idea or thought represented, again, we're on page 89 if you've got the book. If you don't have the book and you'd like to get a copy, we'll pay the shipping. If you just go to our website, if you go to the catalog, you order it, it automatically adds shipping to it. We can't change that. But if you just go to our website at the bottom of the page, there's a donate button. It uses PayPal. You can use a credit card or anything. You don't have to have PayPal. But the book is $25. PayPal actually takes a percentage. So if you make a donation of $26, we'll pay the shipping. And we'll get it out to you as quickly as possible. And it's a text that you can spend. I mean, I'm going through it now for probably the 10th time in the last 40 years and getting another level of understanding. So the idea, nitbeyun, is that if we'll engage in this work, quote, you will be cured of mental stress. There is no word or symbol in English to convey the idea of freedom from mental stress. The word comforted is used for nitbeyun for lack of an appropriate term. So, you know, Beatitudes, they shall be comforted. But it's not about, and that's the best that with the stress-based and the not understanding how stress is created and how stress is relieved. I just said, well, you'll be comforted. But actually, when you undertake this work, you will learn what it is that creates your mental stress, your stress, and it's done with the mind, and you'll be able to remove that mental stress or be cured with the disorder and diseases related to excess mental stress. We're not knocking stress. Stress is a requirement. We actually do a workshop called Getting the Stress You Need. It is absolutely required that you have stress. But if you don't know how that's created, life is tough. And it's simple. All you have to do is create a stress. And stress is the motivator behind all behavior. It's a necessary aspect of life. If I didn't have the ability to set a goal and the motivation to do so, i.e. to drink water, when I am thirsty, I set a goal, I reach for a glass of water. If I didn't have the capacity to do that, I would die of thirst, literally. Stress is the motivator. Stress is behind all behavior. It's an absolute necessity. But there are certain stresses you need and certain ones that you don't. And then there's several different definitions here, broken down words around humility, loaning, borrowing, Nura. And you remember we've mentioned the Nura Foundation, N-O-O-R-H-A, and that's Dr. Rocco Arago. You can tap into his work on Aramaic. He's the man that originally brought me into the Aramaic 40-some years ago. So Nura is light or enlightenment. The Aramaic idiom often equates light with knowledge, darkness with ignorance, and sight with understanding. So you'll remember there where they said, you know, those who having eyes do not see, those who having ears do not comprehend. So having this state of active light in the mind, which would be a reflection of the active presence of love. And there are several passages, again, that the idea of light is expressed in the books of John, Matthew, and such. So light, and then Nura Kun. So let's flip back to K-O-U-N, and see what we've got. K-O-U-N. That's on page 80, K-L-U-N, indicating plural possession of the antecedent. So whatever it is that's being spoken about, it's going to be your possession. So it's speaking here of your light, that you're bringing in this light on a personal level. Enlightenment, the objective title of this book. So the next passage, if we turn over to 90, is giving a variation on this idea of what came before it. So you add un to it, tuvehun, a latent neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being will become your conscious possession, you who. So how do you make this neural structure your possession? Would be one of the applications of that idea. And Uta designates an unconscious mindset or attitude as controlled perception, reason, and memory, and is now lifted in function from a control set to physical action or decided judgment. So the word sne in Aramaic means vicious. So when you see in the text sne Uta, what they're saying is, not only is in the Aramaic, I mean, this is the level of comprehension, the Greeks, the English, the Latin, it doesn't even come close. There's nothing that even resembles it. But Sneut would be saying that there's an unconscious mindset, an attitude, a neural structure that's now controlling perception, reason, and memory. And that mindset has been resonated, lifted in function from a control set to physical action or decided judgment. So basically what it's saying is when you add that uta suffix is that this unconscious thing has taken over everything in your physiology and in your mind. So then, you know, te buta. If you look at the next line, John 1:4, it's speaking of heavenliness. So there is an attitude of mind, a neural structure in the mind that now that you've activated it, it takes over everything. It becomes the controlling mindset that determines perception, reason, and memory. And it's like what I'm working on with this article I was talking about of Easter is trying to convey the depth of understanding of Aramaic, of how deep the change is when one is willing to face what they need to face in themselves. And yet, you know, there's a word called Pharisee that designates someone whose mindset is impervious to truth, and while it feigns all knowledge, its behavior is anything but that of this word tebhuta, heavenliness, that is functioning from a state of love. Continue to just behavior. There's another one of the Beatitudes speaks of just and fair behavior, that ultimately we want to have this unconscious mindset controlling perception, reason, and memory activated, resonated into activity. Remember, we're talking about resonance and brain cells, resonated into activity so that it controls your physical action and any kind of judgment that you make. So you're judging from, you're assessing circumstances in your life from a connected space of love rather than a projection of something unconscious. Orita. Again, we're on page 90, above the middle of the page. Orita is a noun. It comes from the same root as the word Torah, designates the Pentateuch or the Law of Moses. And orita is an Aramaic word as opposed to mnemosa, which is a word of Greek origin. And mnemosa, if you go to the conversation about the law, the people ask Yeshua, you know, what's most important in the mnemosa, the word that represents the customs of the people? They don't have an idea that there's a difference. So what most people call law is, and basically in this culture, what we call law is the customs of the people. What's the judge say is the leading custom here? You know, back in 1800, the custom was this. We called it the law, and the judge said, you broke the law, you're going to be in jail for 5 years. And now, today, the customs change, and somebody does send us, like, well, who cares? It wasn't law in the first place. So when they asked Yeshua about the mnemosa, he didn't answer the most important thing in the mnemosa. He said the most important thing in the orita. And it would be the difference between living in the effect world, the mental awareness of living in the effect world and living in the cause world. Being able to see in the Aramaic, both ends of that equation are connected. You can't separate them. But being able to see from the cause level, what's the behavior if engaged in that produces this result? That would be the orita. And that's the, you know, the comprehension is that's what ultimately, in order to truly function as human beings, we need to have awareness of. And that's referred to in Matt 22:40. Pagra is a noun, mortal body, earthly life, life. And the pagra is the expression of life, and everything has an expression. You know, if you're in a marriage, there's a thing that would, in Aramaic, be called the marriage pagra, would be the life. When two people joined, they created a third life. So it'd be the marriage pagra. The city comes together as a community. That would be the pagra of the community. And so within the pagra, if one has a personal code that matches living as love within whatever pagra they're connected, then the pagra will tend to be uplifted by their efforts and actions within the relationship. If one does not have a personal code that allows port and functioning toward each pagra that one's involved in as love, then there tends to be trouble. There tend to be difficulties. And then parakleta, feminine. It's either Greek or Persian term. It's active in both languages, a similar or same word. And the choice here, because the root of the Aramaic language goes back into Persia, was to use the Persian definition. So it's parak plus leta. Parak in Persian is to break loose or break away. Leta means the curse of, or the effects of, error. So when it speaks of Ruka Dukucha, the Greek's translation comes out as paraklita, is that there is a power in us that will undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. And it is feminine in nature, so the ultimate definition is she which breaks off the effects of sin or error and teaches the truth. Paraklita. Rukatukuch in Aramaic. And that's as expressed in John 14:26. And Jeannie tells me we've got a hand or two up, so let's go for it.
Okay, the first one is 903. I believe this is Rome. You're on the air.
Greetings.
Hey, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. Outstanding.
What's on your mind today? How can we support you?
Sure. Well, it's relatively simple. I was wondering in regards to the book that you all offer, if gone to the website. And I typically have things sent to my P.O. box, but is
right.
this something that would need to go to a physical address?
No P.O. box. We send it by mail. So P.O. box is fine. Just if you would, put your name and address, the P.O. box in there, and then just mark it Enlightenment, and we'll get it off in the mail ASAP.
Thank you so much. That's all I've got at this time. Blessings to you all. Much love.
All right. Lots of love and blessings. Glad you're still with us. Bless. Take care.
You as well.
All right. Is Jeannie?
Next one is 541. It's Celinda. Welcome.
Welcome, young lady. Do you have a question for us today?
No, I have an appreciation for you and for your work.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that.
Of course, always. When we learn to appreciate each other, we have gone the additional step beyond gratitude, which I think of as no matter what I find myself in, I am filled with grace and gratitude for my life. And Thanksgiving for me is just for all the goodies that I love. Things are going my way. I'm really thankful. I'm so grateful. And so that's the baseline. And they're all essential, and they're all connected to each other. And so
awesome.
Here we are.
Yes.
I think I mentioned.
So what did you want to express appreciation for?
You're going into the Greek, and you're mentioning that the Latin didn't have a clue about a lot of what the Greeks were talking about. And I've been thinking about that a lot. You know, it feels like the Greek.
Well, actually, let's slow back off a little bit. I actually have never compared the Latin and the Greeks. I pretty much acquaint them. What I'm saying is that they didn't have a clue what was going on in the Aramaic. That there's such,
right.
We've all heard the comment "lost in translation." So when one comes out of the Aramaic mindset into the Greek or the Latin mindset, and I don't have an opinion as to how they compare with each other, the Latin and the Greek, but I do have an opinion, having looked at the result of what comes out of the Latin language and what comes out of the Greek language, that there's not a clue of the mindset and the meanings of words and the function of the mind as described in the Aramaic. So that would be where.
Well, I think I have heard you say in the past that the Greeks didn't get it all wrong, and you
right.
were just talking about the Parakleta. And how close that mm-hmm. was to the Aramaic, probably because it was the same word.
Actually, the
word,
Persian there,
similar,
yes.
Right, a similar word, which they probably adopted from the Persians, would be my guess.
Yes.
I don't know.
It would appear so.
I wanted to share with you that there is, that I mentioned once before, is that there is a difference between the Greek and the Eastern churches and the Western Roman churches. Okay.
A very big difference.
Because quite a big difference. In relation
and,
to, may I finish?
Well, there are pieces you're going through that relate and maybe aren't quite accurate for. So I just want to make sure that we're on track with
right. Well,
what we're saying.
Well, just let me finish, and then I'll be happy to hear what you're saying. The Greeks emphasized more, especially the Russian Orthodox Church. And someone mentioned to me the other day that she thought she heard you say once that perhaps the Aramaic influence went all the way as far north as to Eastern Europe and maybe parts of Russia. Now, I don't know if she heard you correctly or not. But the emphasis on compassion, on mercy, as compared to the emphasis on judgment, that was where I was going to go with you.
To me, that would be the difference between the hostility and fear-based mind and the love-based mind.
Exactly. And so there were some, and maybe that's why I was always drawn toward the Eastern churches, not the Western churches, because I didn't feel the condemnation, even though there were areas that I just kind of left alone and was so blessed to hear the Aramaic understanding. Oh, I see. Okay, I can drop those. But there were resonances that were very helpful to me, and I just wanted to share that with you. So there are passages that I've heard you say the Greeks didn't get them translated wrong, but there was so much they did because they didn't have forgiveness, they didn't have a lot of things, and that they turned Yeshua into some sort of Horus or whoever that Egyptian god was, you know, just basically turned Yeshua into a god to be worshipped. And I understand all that. Now I'm very open to what you were going to share with me where I might have missed the mark.
No, that's gone now. I'm not even sure it was just a small refinement. So
right.
It's gone.
It'll come, sir. It'll come again.
All right.
Well, you have a blessed one. I just wanted to share that with you, and thank you and Jeannie so much, and you just are in my heart, my blessings, and my thoughts.
Received. Thank you.
And thank you for sending me all of those versions of what you've been working on now. Very exciting stuff. Thank you, sir. And
if you
for support.
Yeah, if you click the link to the Facebook page, it has the latest edition, which I've not sent anywhere, but it's on the Facebook page. Upgrades.
Right. With those significant upgrades, did I hear you say that eventually they'll be on the Y again link down below at the bottom of the page? I thought you said something like that because I don't use Facebook.
Yeah, probably will be, and it'll come out in the newsletter.
Yeah, he was actually saying if you're not on our newsletter, that's at the bottom of the page on whyagain.org.
Oh, gotcha.
If you're in our newsletter already, then the next newsletter that'll go out just here in another day or so, we'll have the full completed article as well as announcements on where Michael's going to be in Florida and on the women's intensive and any other announcements that we've got coming up that's new?
Well, I'm waiting until you both end up exploring Pine Valley. I'll have to live.
Probably
going to
be a while, dear heart.
Yeah, I know, 50 years or so, but we'll make it. So
you know, there's a physician in Florida that's been doing my work for the last 30 plus years, and he's set this up. Otherwise, we're not doing any real traveling. That's just not in the cards at this point.
I know you're right.
Especially with the fact that Ari Rain's got a new baby brother coming in August or September. So that's going to lock us in here on a whole other level. Yep,
right.
It is. Delightful. Delightful time.
In Easter card. Unfortunately, I won't get there quite on time, but I did ask her to please. And never mind, because our resurrection day happens every moment, every day of the year. So,
awesome. All right. You have a blessed one.
Thank you. And I think I'm on your newsletter. So that's good.
Okay, cool.
It's all good.
All right.
You just keep talking.
All right, blessings. It's on it. All right, Miss Jeannie.
That's all the hands that are up.
Okay. Well, then let's move on down to We're on the toward the bottom of page 90 in the Enlightenment book with the dictionary, going through the dictionary. So Pogdana is speaking of the commandments. Oh, here's an interesting one, Prigla. You know, it's interesting how the hostility and fear-based mindset wants to make sure that their hostility and fear-based mind is approved by Yeshua. So when he goes into the temple, because they've made the temple a place of business, he cleaned it out. He's saying this, you know, commerce doesn't belong in here. You've got to have a dedicated space for support of living your human life as love. And so he went into the temple and they put a whip in his hand and they tell us he whipped. Well, Prigla, that's what he had in his hand. And a Prigla in Aramaic would be a small broom that would be shooing chickens out of the, you know, the dirt floors, and so he'd shoo the chickens out of the kitchen with a Prigla. He wasn't whipping anybody, but he did go in there with clarity and power. And I think that's what they interpret the, in that time, and it's not much different now. People aren't used to seeing true, powerful presence of love that is clear enough to speak up in truth to and hold accountable those that are off base with truth. He went in with, I would offer Rachma active in his mind. He followed his own first law, was fully connected with love. Clarity that it was time to hold this accountable and move this out. But he didn't have a whip and he wasn't angry. It's just, you know, it's just a fraud. Wasn't there. So that word Prigla is kind of a humorous one. And you realize he had a small broom that they would use for cleaning chickens out. Peshitta, being true or without fault, and that's the text that this translation comes from in Aramaic. And it's interesting that in some circles, in order, I think, to uplift the Greek, you know, if you remember, if you saw the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, you'll remember the father in the movie, everything that was wonderful about the world, father assured everybody that it was the Greeks that did it. And so this idea of the Greeks did it is a kind of a foolish one. What they're offering is that what many Greek scholars, and of course, if Greek scholars ever admit that it's all Aramaic, basically because the thought system is so different, I mean, it would be like having a triple PhD in, let's say, Spanish, and then being told tomorrow you start to teach English, and you don't speak English, but you're supposed to teach it tomorrow. That would be the leap from being, you know, the top scholar in the Greek world and all of a sudden having to go to Aramaic tomorrow. It's like, you got to go back to school now. You got to get a job because what you've got is worth little compared to what the search is for. And the search I would offer is for the man's original ideas in his original language. However, what the Greek scholars will tell you is, oh, well, the Peshitta was written, it was actually a Greek text, and then it was translated back into the Aramaic. It's like, oh, my God. When I hear that father in the movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, saying, oh, the Greeks did it, the Greeks. The Greeks didn't do it. And if you know any Semitic peoples, Arabs, Jews, Middle Easterners, just think about that person that you know personally. Do you think that they would develop the ultimate flower of understanding of the human mind and function and say, you know, Greeks, we think you should write it down. We're not capable. I mean, it's just, you know, I go back to my law school training. prima facie evidence. This is prima facie evidence of ego that the Greeks would tell us that it was written in Greek and then translated into Aramaic. It's just silly on its face. So the Peshitta, without fault. Radpian is to harass, and that's in Matthew 5:11 and 12. Raka, this is kind of an insult in Matthew 5:22. So it's an Aramaic insult implying the object is a contemptible person unworthy of respect. And when I first became involved in the Aramaic, when I first started studying, there was a fellow who was part of our circle, and he used to ask an interesting question. He would say, is respect a necessary aspect of love? Because many people, it would seem, would say, oh, well, they don't deserve my respect, which would equate to they don't deserve anything from me. And yet, if we go to Yeshua, he says the first order of business, if you actually want to have and live a human life, is that you must keep this mindset of Rachma active so that you function as a human being, so that you function as love. And it doesn't matter what they're doing. It hasn't got to do when they said, you know, they didn't say love your neighbor as yourself. They didn't say love God as yourself. They said have Rachma for the creator, have Rachma for neighbor. They were, it didn't have anything to do with the neighbor or the creator. It had to do with the condition of your mind and maintaining your human life. And the only way to maintain contact with your human life is through this gateway called Rachma. And it is nullified. Its functional action is nullified by the activity of hostility or fear. That's why forgiveness, it is required to apply forgiveness to any form of hostility or fear, because if those energies are in you and rouse their ugly heads, Rachma is lost. If Rachma is lost, then the gateway for love is closed in your mind. Human life is now barred. You know, it's like the door is barred. So when they asked Yeshua what's most important in the law, he said, have Rachma, which means you maintain your human life regardless of who, what, where, why, when, or how. It doesn't matter if you're standing in front of Hitler. The requirement of the law, the mnemosa, the way it works, is that you get to have a human life if Rachma is active in you while you stand in the face of someone like Hitler. And who knows, maybe standing as a space of love will have such a powerful impact that all of the pain and rage within that individual or any other individual will melt in the presence of your being. And you'll facilitate change in the world. So just invite you for a moment to take a deep breath. Imagine that gateway in the frontal lobes of your mind. Your brain are opening. Rachma is open. Imagine you're welcoming this presence that you are on a new level. Even your own ego acknowledges it and welcomes it into your form as you breathe. The presence of love fills every cell in your structure, and you're able to extend that energy from beyond your own cellular structure, literally to everything and everyone in the world. You give yourself and the world this gift of your human life, and you willingly face anything in you that would block you in doing such a thing. when Rachma is set. A filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, Kubha, is automatically set and extends that actual energy of love out into the world. And you become the light of the world. And blessings. Thanks for joining us.